Dredge bone meat in flour. Peel and cut up onions and vegetables. Add salt. Add to the meat. Mix well together. Barely cover with liquid and cook for 2.5 to 3 hours.
Now, it mightn't sound like the most appetising of dishes, but that World War I recipe is typical of the sort of fare that sustained soldiers in the trenches. I'm joined by historians Bryce Evans of Liverpool Hope University and John Borgonovo of University College Cork, who've researched various aspects of food and the First World War. We're going to talk about that now. Bryce, first of all, let's talk about the food that came out of field kitchens to the frontline trenches. The key recruiting slogan from the time was "Join Lord Kitchener's Army, 10 bob a week, plenty of grub to eat." There may have been plenty of it, but what was it like?
Well, the old Blackadder joke, and of course in England, Michael Gove, now the education secretary, doesn't like historians mentioning Blackadder, but you remember the Blackadder joke, what's for dinner? Ratto van, rat that's been run over by a van. Was it really that bad? Well, at the start of the war, not really. 4,500 calories a day was the plan. You look at British rations today in the field, it's about 4,000 calories. So to a lot of recruits from the working class, malnourished as they were, there was that promise of food. It was pretty good. Now, things deteriorated, of course, with disruption to supply, as always happens in war. But, you know, not quite as bad as perhaps popular history would have us believe.
There was red meat available, for example, which would not necessarily have been available all that often to the kind of people that you're talking about who would have joined up.
A lot of red meat, and we think about notions of male fighting potency. The British Tommy wants his red meat. At the time, they don't really understand vitamins very well, but they do understand energy. They understand calories and protein. And red meat is whether it's preserved or fresh, is desired by the troops. The problem is, if you're eating a lot of red meat a lot of the time, a lot of it coming out of a tin, like bully beef, it's going to lead to issues such as constipation, which is a common complaint. McConaughey stew, again, was called by one British soldier a war crime, because this tough, fatty red meat. So led to a lot of problems, people getting bunged up.
And there was a dental war crime in prospect as well, because you had bully beef. The other thing you had was biscuit. So bully beef and biscuit tended to go together. The biscuit was hard enough to rip somebody's teeth out, wasn't it?
Yeah. And you even had, and there's some great accounts of people even making picture frames from these biscuits. So hard were they. So put a picture of the wife and kids in the biscuit, essentially. They were tough. So a lot of the time they dunked them in milk or water to try and make them a bit better. Now, I'm painting a picture here that, you know, the food wasn't that palatable. But, you know, compared to a lot of the situations these guys were coming from, you know, slum conditions perhaps, maybe not so bad. But then you've got the whole other issue of morale. Okay, maybe you're getting the calories you need, but you've got to eat them in a situation of no privacy, in a trench for 2 or 3 weeks. You go to toilet without any privacy as well.
So. Yeah, well, maybe constipation was a good idea in that case.
Perhaps, yeah.
51551, by the way, is our text number. And I know that, for example, one of the staples was plum and apple jam, and the rations were cut from 4 ounces to 3 ounces in 1916. And I'm sure there was a great delight amongst the soldiery that the ration had actually been cut. It was suggested that the tins should be used by the artillery, and there's a song called Plum and Apple Jam, that they should be used by the artillery, and that would, and it would end up, the Germans would end up retreating to Berlin. John, Munster Fusiliers, Cork soldiers, soldiers from the city of Cork would have been, as like the soldiers that Bryce is talking about, malnourished in many cases before they joined up. So would the cuisine of the army have been a plus or a minus for Cork men or Munster men who enlisted?
I think from the cities, from the urban poor, for the cities, it was a good thing. A lot of times they put on weight when they entered, even though they were undertaking these really rigorous training regimes, they put on weight because it's the first time they'd had, you know, 3 square meals a day. You also see one of the kind of shocks for the British establishment was the recognition, because they had all this data about size and weights and heights, about how small their army was compared to other armies from other countries, because their people were physically small, because they were working in these industrial factories without, poor, malnourished, not being able to play, not being maybe able to live outside, not being vigorous. And so there was a lot of fear about how they were going to perform, whether they were losing their edge, especially when you start seeing the colonial troops come over who had higher height requirements, who look physically a lot bigger, the Australians, the South Africans. They look bigger, stronger, more powerful, and there was kind of a crisis of conscience among the British establishment about where they were going as a society, and you know where this kind of industrial society had taken them.
Of course, there had been steps to address this. I mean, after the Crimea, after the Boer War, there were attempts to improve the diet, and it was taken seriously at the time. And it's interesting that you mentioned the colonial troops, John. I mean, colonial troops were catered for. There were allowances for people who perhaps, you know, due to religious beliefs, couldn't eat the certain red meat and all the rest. So there was a bit of an allowance.
And then later on in the war, when you know you start getting manpower shortages, they start taking the people who'd been turned away for being too short, and they had the Bantam battalions, people who were, you know, 5'5 and under, and you know, who actually look a lot less intimidating.
I read somewhere that something like, was it about 20% or thereabouts in the first few months of the war were turned down for enlistment because of dental problems, not because they were too small or they were too light or they were undernourished, but because their teeth were so bad. I presume that changed within a few months when you had these manpower.
Well, dentistry also takes a kind of big leap forward during the First World War. It's a lot of time people get their first dental treatment. The dental corps is established eventually, and you know, kind of the idea of teeth being a really important element to a fighting man.
I'm sure we're all very grateful for the establishment of more dentistry.